The numbers told the story. They always do.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Yes, I am. Good Friday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, Sling, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. Jeff Parlay is here as well, producer number 8. This show is jammed. It's jammed, Jeffrey. Vinny Maliulo at the end, Mark Borchardt from an undisclosed location in the desert to talk baseball with us. Dr. Bob with his college football plays. Oh, 11-0, no longer. Had a bad week last week with 2 picks, but he's already back on the board with a pick earlier this week. He's got college football picks to give us, a couple of them on the way. I think he's, 12-2 now on the year. Todd Wright on fantasy football. Jeffrey, if you have any fantasy football questions, Todd Wright will field them as well, but I will pepper him with some fantasy questions. And Chris Felica, the Bear from ESPN's College Game Day, joins us momentarily to talk college football from wherever he is in this United States of America. Plus, of course, we've got to talk about the game last night between Carolina and Houston. And Jeffrey and I go through our contest entries and who we're picking in the National Football League. First of all, Ryder Cup, the 43rd Ryder Cup. 4 matches taking place already, 3 going the way of the U.S. currently. Cantlay and Schauffele, 4 up on McIlroy and Poulter through 4. They're crushing them. Koepka and Berger, Daniel Berger, 1 up on Westwood and Fitzpatrick through 6. DJ and Morikawa now 1 up over Casey and Hovland through 7. I believe that one is turned towards the United States. And the only one that the USA is losing right now to Team Europe is John Rahm and Sergio Garcia, who are 2 up on the BFFs, Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth, 2 up on them through 8. That one largely perhaps can be traced to JT and Spieth not conceding a 2-footer earlier, and then Rahm and Spieth saying, oh, really? Is that how you guys want to play this? We are to crush you now. So anyway, Ryder Cup shenanigans happening right now. Do we have Mr. Felica on the phone? Do we have him? We do. Ladies and gentlemen, the Bear from ESPN's College Game Day and, of course, Daily Wager and the Stanford Steve of the Bear podcast. How you doing, Chris?
Berger. It sounds like we're having the Ryder Cup a couple of years ago over in France.
Special treatment for the Leaflet members, Chris, if you know what I mean. Special treatment.
Exactly. I'm sorry you're not able to open your show with a Juan Soto soliloquy this morning.
Oh, that's coming,
Chris.
I'm
sorry that I have to be your first guest. Okay. I'm going to make sure I tune in to
it. You know, you're on to me. You know me so well. Did you bet anything in the Ryder Cup at all, ultimately?
Yeah, I bet Finau to be the top U.S. point getter and Casey to be the top European point getter. That's all I played.
Okay, let's start with college football. Let's start with last night. Appalachian State ends up beating Marshall 31-30. And I just want to take a moment as a guy who talks about, you know, coaches not knowing what the hell to do in games week after week, both on a pro and college level, to salute Charles Huff, the head coach of Marshall, and Sean Clark, the head coach of Appalachian State, who got in this thing at the end of the game where Marshall was like, all right, the only way we're winning this is if we let them score, let them go 8, and at least we'll get the football back and have a shot at this. And Appalachian State, Sean Clark was like, here's the thing. They're going to try to let us score. Don't you score. And so it ends up ending 31-30. Both coaches doing exactly what they were supposed to do. And all these bettors out there who are, you know, who had App State and are like, hey, what a bad beat for us. Please stop it. Please stop it.
No, not at all.
Yeah. And one more thing, because we got a tweet about this morning. I want to give this gentleman a shout out because this is also a good point. This is from a sharp consultant out there who says, he goes, Gil, the decision by App State last night not to score at the end of the game at least showed for one game that winning was more important than the boosters. I realize different than the situation you've called out where a game is in hand. Just an observation. He's absolutely right. There's a game where all they cared about was winning. I appreciate it. Okay, we'll just leave that out there.
Sorry. Yes. Sorry. No. Yeah. I wasn't sure if that was a question or a statement or if you're looking for my thought there. Sorry.
Just me talking to myself, Chris. All right. What do you like this weekend best? What have you bet?
5 things stood out to me this week. The first one was tonight. I like Syracuse getting the 6.5 against Liberty, and I'd play them on the money line as well. I don't think people understand, realize going through the numbers, like Syracuse in terms of like expected points on the defensive side of the ball, they're a top 25 defense right now. Their offensive line has played much better from what they played last year. The sack rate has gone way down, and that's been a massive problem for Dino Babers' team. Again, is it real or is it fraudulent? They played Ohio, they played Albany, and they played Rutgers. So there's a chance the numbers really are just kind of phony. But at the same time, Liberty's been really kind of unimpressive this year to me. I think they're kind of a one-man show with Malik Willis. So I don't think they're going to go up to the Dome and win by more than a touchdown. So I took Syracuse plus the 6.5. I took Mississippi State on the money line and plus the 2.5 against LSU. I don't think Stingley's going to play. You're looking at an LSU defense that's allowed nearly 8 yards of play in a loss to UCLA. I don't think what they did against Central Michigan and McNeese State really masks anything. The last six times they've been favored against the Power Five team, basically since that national championship game that they've won, they're 3-3. So I think the perception in the public eye about LSU, they still have the bright eyes of the 2019 season and Coach O and LSU, go Tigers. But the reality is they're not the same team. And I like Mississippi State. In conjunction with that, I like UTSA plus the points and on the money line against Memphis. Memphis should not have won that game last week. They got two non-offensive touchdowns, a terrible officiating gaffe. They were outgained by 220-something yards, had like 11 first downs in the game. UTSA is the best team in Conference USA, in my opinion. So I'm going to take the Roadrunners plus the points and on the money line there. I like North Carolina laying the 12 against Georgia Tech. We saw Clemson's offense really struggle last week against Georgia Tech, which is not a great thing. And I think UNC has the offense going now after where we were in the opening loss at Virginia Tech. I don't think that the young quarterback at Georgia Tech is going to be able to match North Carolina and the offense. Sam Howell is going to be able to put up there. So I like UNC laying the points. And then there's one more that I like. I just totally forgot what it was right now. So I'm going to look at
it. Oh, there it is. Campbell's soup can. There you go. You're back. All right. By the way, let me just say, as you peruse that, let me just say, Dr. Bob's going to be on in about 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and he's going to give us two picks. One of the picks that he will not give us, but that he likes as well, was Syracuse tonight. That's not one of his two picks that he's given us tonight, but he is on Syracuse as well. All right, what's your last one?
And the last one I had to remember, it's the stink line of the week. It's Nebraska plus the 5, 5.5, whatever it is, at Michigan State. I've been asked about this game more than any game this week. Why is Michigan State only a 4.5 or a 5-point favorite over Nebraska? They should kill Nebraska. Well, the power ratings and the odds makers know that the game at Michigan State with Miami last week was a 3-point game in the fourth quarter, and so Miami turned the ball over twice deep inside their own territory. They know that Northwestern might just flat out stink, and that's two of their wins. And I think they see improvement from Nebraska in how they played Oklahoma last week. They see the Illinois game as kind of an outlier. It was just an abomination of turnovers and penalties and bad decisions. So I think the power ratings understand that Nebraska is better than their record, and Michigan State probably isn't as good as that 3-0. So Nebraska plus the points is my final play. I was hoping I was going to be able to get 6 on this game, but it doesn't look like I would take that. By the way, I got a chiming in from the front right seat, Mr. Kirk Herbstreit, saying he might just do money line on that as well. So Nebraska wins outright. That's the Kirk Herbstreit prediction.
Kirk just told you that? Extra, he just goes Nebraska money line?
Kirk says Nebraska money line. So I think we'll have to go there as well.
Dude, are you and Kirk aware that you're betting on Scott Frost? Are you guys aware of that? Or
Yeah, I think we are.
Just curious.
I know you and a couple people probably disagree with that, but that's okay.
No. I'm not involved, to be honest. I am not involved, full disclosure, in that particular game. Where are you guys this week, by the way, for game day? Where are you calling me from?
We're pulling into like the Soldier Field area right now.
Beautiful.
Game day is in Chicago for the pre Notre Dame Wisconsin. And then after the show, Kirk and I will head to Oklahoma for the Oklahoma West Virginia primetime game.
What a life!
Pretty good, huh?
Yeah, pretty good. By the way, how do you feel about Notre Dame, Wisconsin, given that game day is there? 6.5-point spread on the Badgers as the favorite.
I don't feel comfortable really either way. I can see a lowish point total in the game, like 24 probably wins it. I think you give Jimmy Leonard and that Wisconsin defense an extra week to prepare for a quarterback who they're familiar with in Jack Cohn in Notre Dame against a bad offensive line. That's a recipe for a low-scoring game there. And then Wisconsin has been, of 130 teams in the FBS, they're 128th in red zone scoring percentage, which you just don't see from Wisconsin normally. They've got nearly as many turnovers in the red zone 3 as they do touchdowns 4. So it's something that we're really not used to seeing from Wisconsin. Maybe tomorrow will be the day they come out of their offensive shell, but I can see this being like a 24-20 type game tomorrow.
All right, 20 seconds. Will NC State, if not upset Clemson, will they flirt perhaps with an upset?
I think they will flirt. I just don't think Clemson's problems are fixable right now easily with the roster that they have. The offensive line is bad. They're inexperienced at running back. They're really counting on Shipley to be something. I'm not sure that he is. They don't have that slot wide receiver. There's no threat of a quarterback run with Uiagalelei. I mean, Dave Doran's teams have typically struggled against top 10 teams, but it would not surprise me tomorrow, again, to see Clemson in a four-quarter game.
Okay. Chris Velika, everybody, the Bear, with Kirk Herbstreit chiming in. Tell Kirk we said hello. Appreciate it, Chris.
I will.
All right, man. The Bear giving us his college football picks. We'll have them all in the newsletter. It is a numbers game brought to you by BetMGM Nevada right here at Visa, the Sports Betting Network. Fantasy football next.
Gil Alexander on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Football season is here, and it's time to download BetMGM Sports. It's Nevada's premier sports betting app. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Just download the BetMGM app today. It won't take you but a few seconds, and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada, whatever your sport, whatever your betting style. You're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Skill Alexander, ladies and gentlemen, he's the greatest radio host of all time. The legendary All Night with Todd Wright back in the day on ESPN Radio. Now he's got the Todd Wright Toddcast, the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast. Coincidentally, here to talk fantasy with us, the great Todd Wright, with his beautiful face, everybody, for just the second time ever on the show. How you doing, Todd?
Yeah, it was, 11 months ago, leading up to a November, no, 10 months ago, leading up to a November Masters, we last tried this, so welcome
That's
to my
right.
kitchen.
And then last time you had this big thing behind you, and now we're in his kitchen. I like the football in the back there as well. All right, Todd, we have plenty to get to, so I want to get to it real quick. One, Jeff, let's start with a question from you, because you're so kind to say, hey, if the VEASAN crew has any questions, so Jeff, what's yours?
All right, yeah. Todd, good morning. Good
morning,
to see
Jeff.
Your face today. Let's look at the Dolphins real quick. Tua Tagovailoa is out. Jacoby Brissett is in. It has been pretty wayward for those skill position players through the first 2 weeks. Is it still a avoid those guys with Brissett in there, or are you more inclined to look at those skill position players this week because Brissett is in instead of Tua?
One, Jeff, I love your voice. I love your voice on VEASAN. I'm a big fan of yours. Second, I like wayward. It's more meandering at this point. I don't know that there was a lot of value in Dolphins with Tua until further notice, and now that even takes a little bit of a step down. I get if you have to use Gaskin in a running back role, you're using him until further notice, and maybe because Brissett is in there, Gaskin has maybe a touch more value right now, but I don't know about anybody else. I'm not rostering any Dolphins in any leagues right now until further notice.
He's like a young Kevin Harlan, Todd. That's the voice we're cultivating here with Jeff.
Can we
Harlan.
Get him to say, oh, baby, what a play? Because Kevin Harlan used to say that when he did, Kansas City Chiefs games.
Yeah.
He doesn't do that anymore, but that was kind of his signature call when he was local to the Chiefs.
Yeah, I remember him actually saying that many times in the past. Someone got to him, Todd. They made him change his mind on that. All right.
Too bad. He went at work and he got ruined. It happens all
happens all the time. All right, so this is a question I think we ask annually. We're 2 weeks into the season, and there's a lot of people bitching and moaning. They're like, this guy stinks. I want to get rid of him. To that, you say what?
One of two things is going on. One is operator error. You own a player you shouldn't have drafted in a starting position early in the draft, so it's your fault, and you need to take accountability for it. The other thing might be the player's just off to a slow start, and it can happen. You know, much is made on the field in the NFL if you're off to a 0-2 start, how difficult it is to come back and be a Super Bowl contender. It's not in fantasy football. So some players who do get off to a 0-2 start, it evens out over time. So be patient if you're of the belief you did not make an operator error and draft a player you shouldn't have drafted, especially to be a starter like an RB1 wide receiver 1, RB2 wide receiver 2.
Couple other macro points before we get to some specifics. One, you've been at the forefront of these, you know, having tight ends is not a thing. I'm sure you have numbers to back that up again this week. And the other thing is, and we don't talk about this as much, you think PPR is a relic and shouldn't be part of fantasy anymore.
Yeah, none of my leagues use it. The podcast league doesn't use it. The foundation league, my personal league, doesn't use it. PPR was created in the 20th century to bump up pass catchers, wide receivers, and tight ends because the game was so run-dominated. The game is not run-dominated anymore. Derrick Henry is an alien. He was normal in the 90s. He's not anymore. Last week in my standard scoring settings, twice as many pass catchers, wide receivers or tight ends, scored double-digit points than running backs. So why do they need an extra bump when there's twice as many of them scoring double digits as running backs? I don't understand it. If you're going to evolve with the NFL and evolve with technology, why is PPR still used? I do not understand it, and that's why I do not use it.
And the tight end thing, only three tight ends worthwhile this past week, Kelsey, Gronk, and Hockenson, and Gronk is like a crapshoot on a weekly basis?
No, he's a hot craps table.
Oh,
right,
okay.
Now. He's a hot craps table. So to make the Vegas analogy, you go back to Super Bowl 55, Gronk scored, the first two touchdowns of the game, or two of the first three. Gronk's now scored two touchdowns in his last three games. So he's a hot craps table. And I'm saying this even about a tight end, but he's with Tom Brady. And the Bucs don't know, they're not scoring touchdowns with running backs. There's still enough to go around for Godwin, and Evans had two last week. Now Antonio Brown's on the COVID list. You cannot get away from Gronk right now. It's like leaving a hot craps table. You just don't do it until Gronk craps out.
And eventually he will crap out. That will happen. Derrick Henry, you brought him up, so I will dovetail off that. There were a lot of folks who might have been worried about Derrick Henry on their team. Not to worry anymore, huh?
Well, yeah. So Titans add Julio Jones, right? Big offensive weapon. Okay, so that's fewer touches for Derrick Henry. Titans lose Arthur Smith. He goes to whatever he's doing in Atlanta with the Falcons. It doesn't look good through two games. So I think there were fantasy owners who early in the first round passed on Derrick Henry. Now, there's also this out there every year. Well, Henry is going to break down because he's carried the ball so much. Yeah. Well, he got off to a very slow start this season and even a slow start in the Seattle game, Gil, and then just exploded. I mean, his three touchdowns were scored three different ways. One, you know, a run to the right, and he was just patient and brought it back to the left. Another was, a 60-plus yard run, and then he had a short touchdown. He touched the ball, if you include his receptions, where he had, I think, six. He touched the ball 41 times. Julio Jones touched it six times. So for anyone who passed on Derrick Henry, maybe after McCaffrey at number one, and let Henry slide to, pick five, six, maybe even further than that, that's bad on your part, because Derrick Henry is an alien and he's still the fantasy horse that most of us have appreciated the last few years.
We talked about people overreacting after 2 weeks of fantasy football. Give me a player, though, that you feel legitimately is a sell high guy right at this point.
For second year in a row, it's Lockett in Seattle. I mean, Lockett owners know this from last year. If you were a Lockett owner, you loved him in September, and by late October, November, you were wondering whether you even start him. He was my wide receiver 2 last week, only behind Cooper Kupp. He has three touchdowns. He's cranking out big plays. Sometimes you just got to take a step back and look at the team. You know Lockett isn't wide receiver one on the Seahawks. It's DK Metcalf. So this is not going to continue. If you drafted Lockett to be a wide receiver two or wide receiver three, and someone in your league, maybe with Russell Wilson or a Seahawks fan, wants to give you wide receiver one value in return for Lockett, you sell high.
Now, if you're a Josh Allen owner, what's your level of uneasiness? What should your level of uneasiness be right now?
He was the number one player in my scoring settings last year, Gil, even ahead of Mahomes. I mean, the top 10 were quarterbacks in my scoring settings, and I tick up 1 point per 30 yards passing, not 25, because it's such a pass-heavy lead, again, involving my scoring settings. It's too early to call him a disappointment, but, I mean, he's not producing as a top 10 quarterback right now. My concern is, there's one tight game against the Steelers and then a blowout against the Dolphins. So we'll see what happens against Washington this week. But I'm concerned that running backs are scoring fantasy-wise. That didn't happen with Josh Allen last year. Josh Allen got those rushing points, whether it was yardage or touchdowns. The Moss, two touchdowns last week. It's a little bit of a concern, but and Diggs' numbers reflect that Josh Allen isn't as explosive. The one red flag from the analytics is, in the first 2 weeks, Josh Allen is extremely inaccurate again on passes of 10 to 25 yards. I know Trevor Lawrence leads the league in uncatchable balls, but Allen's inaccuracy on throws of 10 to 25 yards is a concern through 2 weeks. Let's face it, he's a good player. It's a good team. You just want to see him get it straightened out sooner rather than later.
We only have a minute left here, Todd, so I give you the floor to rail against one of your favorite people to rail against, Mike Zimmer. What do you got?
Well, 0-2 start, despite him saying he had no concerns about his job security. I've said from the beginning this year, the GM, the head coach, and the $45 million cap hit on the quarterback are all gone by next year. Even the former tight end in Minnesota, who's with the Giants now, even fired a shot at Zimmer saying,
Rudolph,
you know, it's nice to play for a head. Yeah, it's nice to play for a head coach who actually cares about all aspects of the team. it's six offensive coordinators now under Mike Zimmer. So they change schemes roughly every 2 years. The GM and the coach ran off the quarterback who got them to the NFC title game on the Minneapolis Miracle 4 years ago. And from a statistical standpoint, they only ran 11 personnel, about 10% of plays last year. This year, they're at about 90% of plays, which is why KJ Osborne is being picked up on waivers in fantasy leagues. It's not a good situation on the field for the Vikings because they are playing exclusively fantasy football right now.
Thank you, Todd. Got to run. Todd Wright, everybody. We'll come back.
The Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a weekend warrior at BetMGM. King of the Weekend is a free-to-play challenge where you can win up to $50,000 for correctly picking the highest-scoring pro football teams during that weekend. Simply log into your account, find the King of the Weekend contest in your promotion section, then pick the six teams you think will score the most points from the selected games. $1,000 to go to the top entry each week, and if you guess all six in the right order, the grand prize of $50,000 could be yours. Plus, hundreds of dollars in free bets will be awarded to players who come close to a perfect score. Go to your account and try the King of Weekend or the King of the Weekend free-to-play game. New to BetMGM? Download the app today and make weekend football even better. Only at BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Nevada. Ryder Cup scores, once again, three in favor of the U.S. right now. Three of the four matches in favor of the U.S. One in favor of the Europeans. Cantlay and Schauffele 5-up on McIlroy and Poulter through 7. Kepka and Berger 1-up over Westwood and Fitzpatrick through 8. And DJ and Morikawa 1-up on Casey and Hovland through 9. So those last two, obviously, much more precarious than the Cantlay-Schauffele margin over McIlroy and Poulter. But the one that the USA is losing, again, Ramon Garcia 3-up over JT and Spieth through 10. And it really did turn, and David Faraday sort of called it, it really did turn when JT and Spieth made Sergio put in a two-footer, didn't concede it. And Sergio, I believe, said, ¿Estás serio? And that was the end of that for the Spanish folks out there. How you doing, Jeffrey? Yeah.
No, I'm good. I'm just laughing at the fact that they made Sergio putt that out, and then immediately after that, Rahm and Sergio have dominated that match.
Karma much? The greatest, they make the greatest Ryder Cup player of all time putt out for 2 feet, by the way. Let's talk to one of the great golfers that I know. How about that for a segue? It's the great Bob Stoll, everybody. Dr. Bob, how you doing, Bob? How's your golf game?
I'm down to a 4.7 index. But that is going to go up since I don't play golf for 6 months during football and basketball season. So I will start next spring struggling again, but then hopefully we'll get it back down at the end of the summer.
I have faith. I have faith in you. All right, so you came into the show last week, and you were 11-0. And people are like, oh, my goodness, the guy's 11-0. And you said very honestly, you're like, look, I'm not going to be, this is not sustainable. You can't go undefeated, right? And so two bets that, let's face it, they were kind of done by halftime last week. But that was bound to happen. But you're already back on the board this week with a win yesterday?
Yeah, I had the over last night. Over 50, what was it, 58.5? It closed at 59, I think, 59.5. And they got to 61 pretty quick early in the fourth quarter, and then they didn't score the rest of the game. But I didn't care. I shut it off and watched Ted Lasso. Once I won that bet. You know?
Unless the lights shut off or the lightning came or something stopped it before the 55-minute mark, you could watch Ted Lasso for sure. Autopsying the games last week, because it was so funny, Bob, because when you come in on a show and you're 11-0, it's funny how people are like, oh my God, well, I got to play these guys' picks. And of course, then they come back and they're inevitably like, of course, when I start playing them, they lose. But when you do the autopsy on those two games, were they legit? I mean, they were pretty legit losses. What went wrong, would you say?
They both had the Pitt Western Michigan thing flew over. And, you know, it's just, I thought Pitt's defense would be better. Western Michigan hadn't had the big play pass game that they had last year, the best receivers in the NFL now. And they, you know, the quarterback had gone back to averaging about 12 yards of completion instead of 18 yards of completion they did last year. So I just thought, oh, Pitt can handle that. Pitt's pretty conservative when they need to be, but they weren't because they had to keep scoring. So that game flew over. The Army game, actually, based on the stats, it would have projected pretty close to the total, but they just converted every third and fourth down, and then just marched up and down the field against UConn. So, two bad picks. That happens. And people were like, you weren't even close, and you suck, and I'm never going to use your service again. I was like, but of the 11 winners, 10 of those weren't really that close either. Like, you're getting these plays, Gil. I mean, only one of those was close.
Man.
So it's like, it doesn't matter how close they are. I mean, who cares? I mean, but really what should happen, and, you know, I also had a down week in the NFL. And last year, of course, the best NFL season in 30 years, a 69% on best bets, which is also ridiculously good. And I won a lot of close games. So that's not going to happen, you know. But the main point is, and I was 3-0 week one, so people are like, oh, my goodness. But, you know, I'm 0-2 last week, but I'm still 3-2 for the season. And more importantly, you're due to lose if you start the season 14-1 overall. I'm like, I'm not due to lose. I'm due to be whatever my long-term percentage is.
Correct.
My long-term percentage in college football is 55%, which is as good as it gets. My long-term percentage in the NFL the last 6 years since I've changed my model and gone to these advanced metrics using play-by-play data, I'm 59.3% over 300 games on best bets in the NFL in 6 years using this model. I don't think 59% is that sustainable, but I didn't think it was going into last year. I was 69%, so who knows? But nonetheless, I'm not due to lose. I'm due to be profitable going forward, regardless of whether I've won 11 straight or lost 11 straight. That's what people need to understand. I'm not due to do anything. I'm just due to be, 55 to 59% going forward.
That's my long-term record.
Yeah. That's what people need to think about.
It's a great betting lesson for everybody, especially folks who are new to betting. By the way, you didn't happen to catch Patrick Cantlay's Ryder Cup talk yesterday. If you didn't, I urge you to seek it out because it's similar to this little discussion we're having right here. Let's get to it because we have about 4 minutes, 5 minutes. You have a couple picks you would like to share. What are you, 12-2 then on the season in college football? 12-2 right now?
Well, let's see, 12-2. That's right. So here's two more. And I've always been good on your show until last week, so I don't know what happened there. But
I'm sorry.
Maybe the new producer.
My fault.
blame it on him.
Parlay.
No, I've been good this year until last week. Oregon State's one of them against USC. I just like their offense. USC's defense has not been that great. They're giving up over 7 yards per pass play to opposing starting quarterbacks. And Oregon State switched quarterbacks in the middle of game one. Chance Nolan is now the quarterback. And I did some reading. I was like, what is with this guy? Because last year he was mediocre at best when he had three starts in the middle of last year. But I did some reading on him, and he dedicated himself in the offseason to studying the Beavers' NFL-style offense, which is very complicated. Last year, from what I read, he would go to his first read and then take off running, and he's a good runner. He averages 7.5 yards every time he runs. But this year, the offensive line's experienced, they're protecting well, and he's going through all his progressions, and he's averaging over 9 yards per pass play. And normally when you see that after three games, you're like, well, it must have been a 90-yard bomb or a couple big pass plays. That's the reason he's averaging 9.3 yards per pass play. That's not the case at all. His highest pass play of the year is 45 yards, which is actually pretty low after three games. But he's got so many passes between 20 and 45 yards, consistently moving the ball down the field, reading the defense, finding the open guy. So I think he's a real deal. I think this guy's a real deal. And Oregon State, not only can they throw the ball this year, but they've always been a good running team in recent years, and they're averaging over six yards per running play and over 200 rushing yards a game. So I think their offense can keep up with USC. Oregon State's got a, you know, worse than average defense, and Keenan Slovis is back this week for USC. Not that they missed him last week, but he's back. He should have a good game. USC should score lots of points. Oregon State should score lots of points. I get make it 36-31 USC. Oregon State's getting 11. So I think it's going to be a single-digit game. So Oregon State plus the points there.
Beavers plus 11. That's the late game, among the late games on Saturday, 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Pacific. And number two, sir.
Yeah, you know, if you're looking at Rutgers, and I like Rutgers going in this season. I thought they were improved. They certainly are. But, I mean, they're beating the snot out of teams. But their offenses, they played some bad teams pretty much, except for Syracuse. And they got outgained in that game. I mean, Syracuse, I think, turned it over six times. And Rutgers still only scored 17 points. So there's something wrong with the offense at Rutgers. They're only averaging, is it five yards a play? It's not 5.0 yards per play against three defenses that would allow 5.8 to an average team. So they're worse than average offensively. So they're scoring all these points, but they've special teams, turnovers. Right now, they've averaged 10 points of special teams value per game.
Ooh.
That is so unsustainable.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. And they're +8 in turnover margin, which is another 11 points per game. So they've had 21 points of kind of randomness that's helped them out. So Rutgers, a solid team, but Michigan is so good this year. Last year they were 2-4, and the problem was the defense, which went from consistently being great to being not good last year, worse than average on a national scale. They changed defense coordinators. They're back to being very good. And the offense is big play after big play. They're not going to keep up with so many big plays. But Washington can run the ball consistently. Their worst running game of the year was 348 yards and 6.3 yards per run. And that was against Washington, who has a really good defense. Scarlet Knights have a good defense, but it's in their pass defense. They brush the pass well. They don't allow a lot of completions. But Michigan doesn't need to throw. They don't like to throw. And Rutgers has been a worse than average run defense so far. So I think Michigan's just going to run the ball. And every once in a while, they're going to get single coverage on the outside. But Max Melton, Rutgers' best corner, their best defensive player, got suspended for some mischief he got into last week. He's got six passes broken up and two of the team's three interceptions in just three games. He also blocked a kick. This is their best defensive player. He's out. So they've got one decent corner. And Michigan's got two big play receivers. So one of those guys is going to be open on play action. So they'll hit a big play every once in a while and run the ball consistently. So I laid the 20.5.
Okay.
With Michigan.
There you go. Thank you, Dr. Bob, Oregon State and Michigan. drbobsports.com at drbobsports. Thank you, Bob. We'll talk next week.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
Coming back, baseball with Mark Borchardt on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Gil Alexander on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a weekend warrior at BetMGM. King of the Weekend is a free-to-play challenge where you can win up to $50,000 for correctly picking the highest-scoring pro football teams during the weekend. Simply log into your account and find the King of the Weekend contest in your promotion section. Then pick the six teams you think will score the most points from the selected games. $1,000 will go to the top entry each week, and if you guess all six in the right order, the grand prize of $50,000 could be yours. Plus, hundreds of dollars in free bets will be awarded to players who come close to a perfect score. Go to your account and try the King of the Weekend free-to-play game. New to BetMGM, download the app today and make a weekend football event even better. Only at BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Nevada. It's Gil Alexander. Jeffrey Parlay, producer number 8, is here as well, and Mark Borchardt standing by. We've gone 45 minutes of this here program, Jeff, this here fine national radio program, and Chris Velika called the shot right out of the chute. We haven't gushed about Juan Soto yet. Ladies and gentlemen, Juan Soto once again reaching base every single at-bat last night, every single plate appearance. Two homers, a walk, a single. It's just unbelievable what he's doing. And again, we've been beating this drum while you hear people do segments on end about NL MVP and don't even mention Juan Soto. Don't even mention him. Juan Soto is your MVP. He is now down to plus 450 at DraftKings. Bryce Harper right now, still the favorite, minus 215. Fernando Tatis Jr., for reasons that are as peculiar as anyone can even imagine, somehow still at plus 250. And then Juan Soto, the greatest player in baseball right now at plus 450. Every day I come on here, and by the way, plus 500 at BetMGM. Every day I come on here and I read a litany of tweets about what he's doing and trying to put in perspective what he's doing on a nightly basis for the Washington Nationals. I'll just read a few this time again from Mark Zuckerman. Time to update this one. Juan Soto has now reached base 4 times in 24 games this season. The only players ever to do it in more games in a season are Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, Ted Williams, and Barry Lamar Bonds. I add the Lamar. Juan Soto's NL ranks heading into last night. First in on-base percentage, first in walks, first in average with runners in scoring positions, second in OPS. Second in Fangraphs WAR, although now he is ahead of Bryce Harper in Fangraphs WAR. Second in weighted on base. Second in weighted RC+. Second in runs. I could go on. This from Baseball Reference. Juan Soto, last 16 games played, 29 for 54, 19 walks, 1 hit by pitch, 4 doubles, 1 triple, 5 homers. His slash, 537, 653, 926. The last player to hit 500, 650, 900 in a 16-game span before Soto, Barry Lamar Bonds, 2004. When we're comparing a guy to Bonds, Ruth, Gehrig, Ted Williams, that was just the 16 games, but even the full season was the first one I just read. What are we talking about? What are we talking about who the MVP is? And one last thing before we go to Mark Borchardt, it's now... You know, there are some hallowed records in Major League Baseball that are believed by most baseball nerds to have no shot at ever being broken. The most, perhaps the most foremost record is Joe DiMaggio hitting in 56 consecutive games, getting a base hit in 56 consecutive games. That's the record, the one that most people think can never be broken. Ted Williams reached base in 84 consecutive games. That's another one that people say, it's never going to be broken. One of the ones that is on that list, though, is the most consecutive plate appearances reaching base. And that record is believed to have no shot at ever being broken. That is 17. That is 17. And that is held jointly, and who could forget these performances, Earl Averill Jr. in 1962 for the Angels. And then, who could forget old Piggy Ward in 1893, doing it as well. Juan Soto has now reached base in 10 consecutive plate appearances. He's more than halfway there. I don't know what else to say. But he's now at plus 450. 2 days ago, he was 30-1. He should be neck and neck with Harper. And by the end of next week, he should be your favorite to be the MVP. Mark Borchardt is here from an undisclosed location somewhere in the desert in Arizona. Mark, you agree or disagree?
Oh, I totally agree. And we talked about this on Tuesday. And here's what's super interesting to me as somebody who tracks weighted runs created plus. Harper was at 172 on Tuesday when we talked about it. And Soto was at 161. And I said, well, if they use this weighted runs created plus, Harper's got an 11-point gain or advantage on him. But since then, Soto has picked up 9 weighted runs created plus points. So he's at 170. Bryce Harper's at 172, so they're neck and neck. That's almost impossible to do this late in the season because there's so many at-bats. So that's just fascinating to me that he could pick up that much and weighted runs created plus in that short amount of time.
It's incredible, dude. There's graphs of like the pitches that he doesn't swing at. It's unbelievable. Like if you miss the strike zone, there's no evidence of him ever swinging. It's just the most incredible thing. Anyway, we'll leave it at that. Just between your Robbie Ray 100-1 and me and Jason's Juan Soto at 100-1, we could hit them both perhaps for AL Cy Young, where Robbie Ray is the favorite, and Juan Soto for the NL MVP, still with about a week and a half of baseball left to go. I jammed you up on your picks the last couple times, so let's get your picks first here. What do you got today?
Okay, I'm going to go with two first five-inning games, and the first team I'm going to go with is the Mets. And I'm going to take a half run here, and you can get it like plus a half, minus 115. The actual line is like plus 135, plus 140 on the five-inning line, which isn't a bad price either. And the reason I'm doing this is I have two models. The Crunch model has the Mets priced at minus 112 on the first five innings. And then I have another model that takes the three metrics and crunches that down and gives me a projection as well. And I have the Mets at minus 123. One of the things I wanted to say about this game that I thought was really interesting is Milwaukee at home since July 1st has a 90 weighted runs created plus, which is 26th in Major League Baseball. And I thought that was a really interesting stat. And if you look at the Mets on the road, they're at a 101 weighted runs created plus in that same time frame. So for those reasons, I think this Mets plus a half minus 115 on the five-inning line is a good play, Gil.
Okay. I was going to shout to Jeff. He's on your Mets, but you could even win that with a tie. So you're not exactly. Mets plus a half for the first five. And number two?
Okay, this is the marquee matchup of the night, the Yankees and the Red Sox. And I'm going to play the under 4.5 on the five-inning line. You can get it at about minus 115. It started at 5, and it's really moved down, and I totally agree with the line. And before I get into the numbers that I have projected, I want to just say this is, I think it's still Garrett Cole's Cy Young to get. If he can pitch really good tonight and then he's got another start, the way these markets are, the recency bias in these markets are incredible. Mm-hmm. But I think this is where Garrett Cole needs to make his money. And he had a bad start. If you look at his last start, if you look at just the standard stats, it wasn't very good. But if you go into the three metric chart, it was an 83rd percentile. I think he's going to have a good start. Eovaldi, he's got a good base winner run number. I think this 4.5, I've got it projected at 3.6 runs. I think this is a good price in a playoff type atmosphere to go under in the first five innings, Gil.
Yeah, I mean, and this bears repeating. So you have the 100-1 on Robbie Ray, I got the 100-1 on Soto, but both of us are you know, we're honest enough to say we have no idea how the vote's going to go at the end. We're just telling you who we think is, you know, who should be the winner. But the Garrett Cole point is a good one. Robbie Ray minus 195 right now at DraftKings to win the AL Cy Young. Garrett Cole plus 170. And it really is a mano at this point. And with Garrett Cole, there's also the New York bias, perhaps. We may have seen it with Tom Thibodeau. Not saying these guys aren't deserving, but saying maybe it's just the nudge they need over the finish line for these. Valid?
Yeah, no, I absolutely think so. Like, this is the grand stage here, and this is why, like, and Cole's numbers are really good. His base winner ERA, 2.76. It leads the American League. Robbie Ray second at 3.11. So, you know, we've struggled with, well, how is the substance going to affect Garrett Cole? But he's pitched pretty good by sabermetric stats.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ray's been really good, too. But I think this tonight's game is his opportunity to make his case for the Cy Young, Gil.
All right. So Mets plus a half first five. And what was the Yankees-Red Sox bet?
It's under 4.5 first five minus 115.
Okay, and as we let you go here, because we only have 45 seconds, Giants, one game lead over the Dodgers now with 9 games left. Looked like it could have been 3 at one point last night, and then it shifted. So it's only the Giants by one game, 9 games left. But the Giants' schedule is now more favorable. What do your numbers say for the NL West title?
Dodgers, 53.9%. Giants, 46.1%. So there's value now on the Dodgers. I think I saw it at plus 120 earlier.
Once again, Mark Borchardt failing to include Giants magic in his model. It's a failure, but we'll work on it this offseason.
Absolutely, Gil.
Yes. And then there's the devil magic of the Cardinals, which is a whole nother session we're going to have. You got to put these things in the model. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Gil. Have a good weekend.
Parlay and I look at our contest entries at Circa Millions next, right here on the Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.